Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Dungeons & Dragons. For more information and news we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Welcome, everybody.
Hello, yay. My geeklings.
I throw magic missile at the darkness.
Thunderbolt.
It's magic missile.
Lightning.
Where's the magic dew? Wait, I just completely botched
it. Mountain dew.
Oh.
Don, are you... You're wearing an iPod now, just permanently attached to you?
I wore it into your house. I was listening to it in the car.
No, that's well, just I just like geek. How it looks extra small on you.
It is the shuffle.
I have been assimilated.
I thought this is your new
This is the app. Most Mac I will have on me.
Yeah, right.
I'm wearing Don's Christmas present to me, which he actually gave me, I guess, on actual Christ's birthday. today. Or whenever it actually is. But he got me Darth Vader slippers, which are awesome.
Yes. The force is with your feet.
They
the
are.
Sad part is, like, we're all staring at them like the other witches in Oz, you know?
Impressive. We will get the Vader slippers.
Impressive.
I saw this picture on the internet, which was really funny until I found out exactly what had happened.
I hate that.
But basically, it was a guy being arrested, and he's this big guy, and he's wearing pink bunny slippers. And he's kind of a scary-looking guy. But it turned out he was arrested for murder. But up until you saw that, this guy getting arrested wearing giant pink bunny slippers was really funny.
Still funny. Yeah.
Still really funny.
Murderer wearing pink bunny.
Okay, let's just pause for the crickets.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
Hi, my name is Donald Marshall. I am a writer and a video game professional here in sunny Hollywood, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Matt King. I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
My name is Pete Robinson, and I am a screenwriter here in Los Angeles, and I am a definite geek.
Yes, he is.
And welcome to Geeks On.
Yes. Anybody do anything geeky here in the last couple weeks?
Nope, not possible.
I've watched the first season of Hex off of the BBC.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
I have no idea how to explain it. It was one of the strangest things. Strangest sci-fi series I've ever seen.
Interesting. Good, bad, ugly?
Yes.
All
very good, very bad. And very ugly, all at the same time.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. And I absolutely hated the first disc. And for some reason, I watched the first episode of the second disc and totally got into it.
Isn't that like Babylon 5?
Except for it's a mess for a
Yeah, Babylon 5 season. Is a mess for an entire season.
Right.
God bless them. So for anybody looking for just something weird, and probably the most realistic, like lesbian straight relationship you've ever seen between two primary characters, go
sold.
Check it out.
Done.
I'm in. I actually saw some outtakes from The Tudors, and I've been really interested to see
boring.
What that is. It really?
I've heard it's awful.
Damn it.
Yeah, I've heard.
Well, their trailer was fantastic.
Yeah, well, all their trailers are fantastic. Rats. They're pretty good.
I saw Hellboy again. I've been watching it. It inspired me to rent one of the cartoons, which I'm in the middle of right now, the cartoon version.
I think
really
the cartoons are amazing. I actually have there are a bunch of them, and I have them all in my Netflix queue.
Oh, you see, I've just started watching the first one, and it is really good. I mean, I was surprised at how good the writing was.
I saw the one where it goes into like a dream world or something, or some. Demon
the cartoon?
World. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one yet.
But they do have the trailer for the second movie coming out.
Yes.
Oh, that trailer looks so good.
Didn't it look like Pan's Labyrinth 2 to you?
Well, no, it looks like Hellboy versus Cthulhu.
To me, because he
was
using
the first one.
He was using all of the...
Even more so in the second.
He was using all of the fairies from Pan's Labyrinth. It's like it looked like Pan's Labyrinth...
He's making it on the cheap.
You know, had exploded out into the Hellboy universe.
It does look a little bit like Hellboy kicks some fairy ass.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that to sound in any inappropriate way.
I finished Mass Effect.
Excellent.
Wow. Good game.
It's good ending, man.
Good ending.
Yeah. Did you min-max your way through to the end?
No. Here's the thing about Mass Effect. The game is just flat out broken when it comes to the combat. I didn't really upgrade at all.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped upgrading my character. I just used the auto upgrade because upgrading your characters is absolutely pointless. I used the pistol alone. That's the only thing I used the entire game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what force powers you have or what weapon you have, what armor, nothing. You could go bare ass into combat and have a pistol and it will work out just the same as if you upgraded all your arm. It's just flat out broken. But
I don't know if I would go to that extreme, but
I did not use anything but my pistol. The entire game.
No, that's okay, because if you max up your pistol's ability, it is actually a very powerful weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
But the point is, the pistol, any weapon that you max up to the top is going to be powerful,
and
as long as you invest the skill points in it.
And if you're using it all the time, the computer will automatically upgrade that as far as it will go.
I don't know. To me, a game means that you're making choices, and there was no choices to make.
I see what you're saying.
Just pulling trigger as fast as I can. That's not a choice. That's just targeting.
So did you have a little romance in the game?
Yep, had the romance.
Where did you go, blue or pink?
Was it shocking?
I went, no, not shocking. Actually, it's really well done.
It didn't deserve the railing against it by Fox News?
No, but come on. I mean, Fox is just being jackasses. They're just doing it. There's just a big ratings push. No, actually, I really liked how all that was done. I thought it was very adult and very well done. I didn't think it was cheesy. It's not like God of War cheesy.
I knew that you could hook up with either the human chick or the alien chick beforehand. I decided way beforehand I was going to pick the human chick, because whenever I come back to the game way, way later, I'm going to do the alien chick. Or I'm going to be with the alien chick.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry about that. And the human chick was so off-putting by the middle of it, I was like, I really don't want to be with you anymore. I would have broken up with her.
Well, you had a couple chances.
If you play through as the female character, do you get a choice of male characters?
Or you get a choice of male characters and female characters. You can have a lesbian relationship
with a female character.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
It's not a lesbian relationship.
Yes. Well, it's with an
If you're talking about the blue,
yeah.
Blue, she's not a female. That's not a female.
She's androgynous, but it's in some strange way expresses human racial breasts.
Hey, just because you're a humanist and you can't think outside the alien box and you're just like,
I kind of was hoping you got to sleep with a gigantic lizard guy.
If she looked like a gigantic donut stacked on a hot top of a whole bunch of other donuts, then maybe I'd buy your argument. But
it just so happens
that she looks like Angelina Jolie's younger sister.
You know what is fascinating about the...
But isn't
the androgynous creature happens to have the largest pair of breasts in the game.
Yes, exactly, by far.
And the longest legs.
Yes.
Well,
that's not very androgynous.
Right.
No.
Okay.
No, in no way at all is it androgynous.
It's blue.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, anyway. And when we watched Star Trek and we saw the blue chicks on Star Trek, they may have been aliens, but they were still blue chicks.
I'm working on Half-Life 2, which is a great game, on Orange Box. You know, yeah. What can I say?
The constant late adopter, I'm playing Splinter Cell.
I'm back on Oblivion.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
That drew you back in?
No, I haven't beaten it yet.
Neither have I. I put it back in a drawer.
I'm the best freaking archer you're going to find, though.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, the end of Oblivion is kind of fun. It is definitely worth... There's something about it that's kind of cool about it.
Okay.
All right.
I think I'm the first of us to join the Assassin's Guild, though.
Ooh.
Yes, you are.
You finally... You killed the final guy, and the guy came to you in the night, and...
I killed the arena champion dishonorably, apparently. I didn't really have a choice.
Kick him in the nuts and throw him out?
Yeah, I did. I dropped my weapon and just beat the crap out of him with my hands.
Interesting.
Carl Culane.
Peter and I started playing Pillars of the Earth. That was a little while ago, but just wanted to mention it. It's a board game that's kind of like Kalos Light. In a way, there's something Kalos-y about the whole thing.
It was a lot of fun, but I couldn't quite figure out. It's hard to tell. Some games you can kind of get a sense of what strategies you can use to win. I could not get my head around that.
Well, that's the same thing for the first time you played Kalos.
First time you played Kalos,
you're just like, you got to be kidding me. And then the second time, you're like, okay, now I see where this kind of had the same type of feel where you just had to play the game first in order to even figure out how you would win the next time.
Yeah.
But we should play. Definitely want to play it again because I thought it was pretty fun. We just got, there was a leak in my roof and I had to leave the game.
Actually kind of interesting. We're in the middle of playing the game and Aaron gets a call from Maureen that there is a leak over the computer.
Water pouring on the computer.
Yeah.
And you've never seen Aaron move that fast.
Yeah, I was out of there.
He was out fast.
So anyway, those are what I did, geeky.
Excellent.
Why don't we move on to geek news?
Let's hit some geek news.
All right, who's going to go first?
Geek news.
Yes.
Matt.
Okay. A tiny chemical brain, which could one day act as a remote control for swarms of nanomachines, has been invented. The molecular device, just 2 billionths of a meter across, was able to control 8 of the microscopic machines simultaneously in a test. Writing in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, scientists say it could also be used to boost the processing power of future computers. Quote, if in the future you want to remotely operate on a tumor, you might want me to send some molecular machines there, but you can't just put them in the blood and expect them to go to the right place. So this is the kind of device that, you know, that kind of device simply did not exist. So this is the first time that we've created a nano brain. The machine's made from 17 molecules of the chemical, watch as I destroy this, duroquinone. Each one is known as a logic device. They resemble a ring with 4 protruding spikes that can be independently rotated to represent 4 different states. One duroquinone molecule sits at the center of a ring formed by the remaining 16. All are connected by chemical bonds known as hydrogen bonds. The state of the control molecule at the center is switched by a scanning tunneling microscope, and then researchers showed they could change the center molecule state and simultaneously switch the states of the surrounding 16. The configuration allows for 4 billion different possible combinations of outcome.
So it's
official. Technology has finally hit the point where it's simply magic to me.
Yeah, that's really, so it's really official. Cool.
It's a chemical computer.
It's a chemical computer. Now,
that's pretty awesome.
What's even more amazing is that to test the control unit, the researchers simulated docking 8 existing nanomachines to the structure, creating a nanofactory or a kind of chemical Swiss Army knife.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. The attached devices created by other research group included the world's tiniest elevator, a molecular platform that can be raised or lowered on command. So we're going to lift things at a molecular level. The device is about 2.5 nanometers, billionths of a meter high, and the lift moves less than 1 nanometer up and down. Machines built using devices such as this would be able to process 16 bits of information simultaneously. Right, as opposed to the fact that we run on computers now, which process 1 bit of information over and over and over again, supremely fast. So, that's what they basically say next. But researchers say they have already built faster machines capable of 256 simultaneous operations, and have designed one capable of 1024. So 1024.
Skynet
is here.
Yeah.
What was the Omni tool? What's that from? Star Trek? No.
Omnitool?
Doctor Who. No, that was from Mass Effect. Yeah.
Mass Effect.
So what's the universal screwdriver
or something like that?
What's the one
what was it called? It was the Sonic screwdriver.
Sonic screwdriver.
That's what I'm thinking.
And Doctor Who.
Yeah. Oh boy.
The Doctor Who people are consistently yelling at the
I know, we
at
get the, more hate mail from Doctor Who fans than any
We've
other
got
group.
Got to bring 3 or 4 Doctor Who fans and we'll sit Dr. next
Hugh?
To their Doctor Who?
Hey,
I want them all to be Chinese.
Well, here's the thing. You know, we only grew up with 1 or 2 seasons of Doctor Who, and we didn't get to see most of it. It was not.
Yeah, I caught it on PBS after school.
What do you mean you grew up with
that?
That's
no geek's excuse.
It's been on since like 1930 something.
I'm only telling you that all I saw growing up was the Tom Baker Doctor Who, and then the Doctor Who that came right after him, who was, I believe, the blonde haired guy.
That's all
with
I ever saw
yo-yo.
Too.
Right. But it's been on.
No, I didn't say it.
We have no
on.
Excuse. We're geeks. Geeks search out obscure material.
It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't.
But the 4 of us, those are the ones we watched.
I don't think it was on as consistently here in the States as it was around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it on BBC occasionally.
Well, the other thing, you know, I think we've gotten a lot of flack recently because every once in a while we don't know something like where the sonic screwdriver comes from. And, you know, we should be looking this stuff up before we before we actually mention it. First of all, the show would last for 20 hours.
And, and that would actually imply planning on our part.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
at what point do you think we think this through?
It's like guerrilla theater here. We have no idea where these conversations are going
to
go.
No, really. It was like 5 minutes before the show. Hey, you guys want to come over to my house and, like, you know, talk about something? Okay,
and the other problem is that, you know, we've got, you know, we have 10,000 brains listening to our show, each of which has a specific geek knowledge.
If only we're we never could tap get... into that.
Yeah. So well, did you see always the... someone yelling at us for not knowing a specific geek area.
So during this podcast, we could actually come up with a statistic. Like every second of our podcast, someone somewhere in the world is yelling at us.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about Dungeons & Dragons. Someone out there is going to be going, no, that was version 2.0, not version 2.0.
And there's only one person in this room who actually plays D&D from time to time. So
currently, yeah.
Currently.
We've all played it, though.
Well, yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So. All right,
I prefer Cyberpunk, and I just bought version 3.0. Thank you very much, which I should have mentioned in my Geek Week. But
okay, moving on.
So we all know that Wikipedia is a not-for-profit. They don't put ads up, and hopefully they will continue to not put ads up.
Yay, Wikipedia.
And they're doing the best to do that. But, however, you know, one of the problems being a not-for-profit is that they, you know, they're running out of money occasionally, and right now is one of those times. So, Wikipedia's annual budget is $4.6 million. More than half of that is dedicated to 300 computer servers and other equipment. It says, on the other hand, the foundation has a tough time raising a few million dollars. The last fundraising campaign featured a video of co-founder Jimmy Wales literally wringing his hands in desperation. The 45,000 or so individuals who contribute annually give an average of $33 each. So campaigns, which are conducted online, raise only about one-third of what's needed. The rest, they have to go and try and hit up outside donors, people like you two, et cetera. Okay. Well, everybody go and put $33 in. Let's add a little extra. That's not that much.
I'll throw a buck. You know?
Put something in. Support your local Wikipedia.
Support your local server, Peter.
I have to admit, the longest time before I actually started using Wikipedia, I thought it was Wiccan something. I thought it was like a Wiccan database or a
Wiccanpedia.
I had no idea.
I'm Wiccan. Surprised that they haven't gotten a lot of big donations from people. It just seems
I think they do. I think that's what happens. They get about a third of it from small donations, and then when they're at the point where they literally are about to be shut down, they go out and they ask people like you two and say, hey, can you give us like $1 million? And they do.
Right.
Hmm. So
it just seems like as far as, you know, I mean.
But wouldn't you want them to, I mean, I would assume that they get a lot of people saying, hey, we'll give you money if you ... You know.
Well, in fact, there's a scandal on the internet right now where someone is saying that they did indeed do that. They came over and said, you know, they said, if you'll make my article a little more favorable, I'll give you some money. And Wikipedia is saying, look, we don't do that, and that's bullshit. We certainly did not do that. But I literally read that scandal today.
Huh.
So, that'd be really hard to do, considering the fact anyone could just change it right back.
No, but they have ways of locking it and that type of stuff. So.
Fair enough.
Excellent. Hit the news, Aaron.
Okay, so I have some board game news and some video game news. So I'll do board game news first. These are some upcoming releases or games that are out now. These are all board games. First of all, I'm not sure if I'd mentioned this before on Geeks On, so I'm just going to mention it again because I could have. Fantasy Flight announced that they're doing a Battlestar Galactica board game.
Yeah.
Now, Fantasy Flight, ooh, as most of you know, is the game company that does all those big-ass box games with all the miniatures and the boards that are the size of rooms and 3,000 cards, and they're usually awesome. They do the World of Warcraft board game, Tide of Iron.
They have a miniature just completely with Jamie Bamber in towel.
Maybe they have Fat Apollo card. The Fat Apollo card. Anyway, it's a cooperative game, which is another cool thing where everyone's playing, and there is a chance that somebody in the game is a Cylon and is sabotaging the game.
Nice!
So, yes, those of you who think it's like, you know.
I'm there.
Some people call it, are already calling it Shadows Over Caprica, because it's like Shadows Over Camelot. But
the next season hasn't started yet, has it?
Nope. No. It's coming up month, though.
Yeah, you know, okay. That's interesting, because I could see people who are not game players getting that, because they're such big fans.
I can totally see that. I'm sure that's the reason why they bought the license to that, you know, franchise.
It's
so
going
to
be
I'm totally excited. Fantasy Flight at least makes very pretty games, and a lot of them are very cool. So,
it's going to be so awesome.
There's a game that I just bought called Pandemic, which
looks great.
I haven't played it yet. Heard it was good. It's another cooperative game about the about the Earth is being swarmed by different viruses and diseases, and the players have to go around and try to kill them before they...
Which is actually not that unfactual, now that we've heard the CDC poor report today on young teenage girls.
Oh, please.
One quarter.
One quarter.
What do you mean, sure?
I mean, yeah, our bodies are filled with diseases.
They were testing for very venereal specific diseases. These are sexually transmitted diseases.
One quarter of young teenage girls have venereal disease.
I think the vast majority was the human papillomavirus.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, that it used to be that one quarter of the population, you know, had, you know, a VD or something like that. And now it's, you know...
One quarter of a specific part of the population.
Not just old people, you know.
Anywho's, that's Pandemic. Z-Man Games, who publishes that, also has a game coming out called Wasabi, which looks interesting, where everyone plays
sushi chefs
trying to make different sushi. Anyway, it looks cute. That's coming out soon. Wits and Wagers, which is a game we've all played before, is coming to Xbox Live, which is pretty cool. A new Carcassonne expansion called Cult, War, and Creativity is coming out.
Cult, War, and Creativity?
Yeah. Interesting.
I understand the war and creativity. I do not understand the cult.
Pillars of the Earth, the expansion, is coming out. Not sure exactly what that... here's something really interesting. Nexus is coming out with Conan board game.
Excellent.
Kind of interesting.
Has anybody played the...
online master?
The online... Yeah.
I have not.
I really want to play it. Maybe I'll buy a copy and just try it out just for the sake of it.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I'll probably end up in, sorry, playing Thorg today. Can't come over.
Anyway, those are releases of some board games that are coming up. Some of them soon, some of them next. This coming up fall.
Hit it, Donnie.
Let's see. At Edelstein Boarding School, the schoolboys wear lip gloss, the headmistress has a weakness for homoerotic comic books, and there is only one subject, how to serve female visitors. Welcome to Tokyo's first schoolboy cafe, the latest in a flurry of eateries in Japan where customers and waiters roleplay themselves in manga style. Now, this is from the same woman who created the Butler Cafe that we did a news article on a long time ago.
The female-only cafe which butlers would serve
your every female,
your every desire.
Yes.
So this is specifically targeting the female otaku population of Japan,
right.
Which means female geek. It's very specifically geek. Edelstein is based on one of Sakamaki, who is the founder's favorite comic books, a 1970s cult classic about romance at a German school. Its visitors are united by a passion for such boy love manga or comics about boy-boy romance for female readers.
Yaoi?
That's the word I was trying to remember.
Yeah.
A genre that is currently undergoing a huge revival in Japan. I'm in the flower arrangement club, whispers one girlish, long-haired waiter at the cafe, looking up from the book of German poetry he is reading.
Wow.
Now, you gotta picture this. I mean, is it really that hard to find gay waiters in Japan? Because we could send them over from California. I'll tell you what.
We got a couple.
You know?
Yeah, but...
It's just very funny to me, the concept of a... Say the word, Aaron.
Yaoi?
Yaoi cafe.
I thought it was yaoi or yaoi.
I thought it was yaoi.
Yaoi?
Yaoi?
Yeah.
Okay, a thousand geeks are screaming out in agony.
Yes, not Yahweh. No, that's quite different.
Doesn't the world end if you say that out loud?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, anyway.
This actually might be the one word that a thousand one of our geeks are not
Yaoi! Get it right!
So the concept is all of these people are supposed to, the patrons are supposed to be women considering giving money or grants or whatever. And so all the waiters are the male students at the school who are there to impress them and serve them.
This is all vaguely dirty.
Vaguely?
Oh, yeah.
What's vague about
it? That's the point of it.
Yeah,
hello?
There's something kind of dirty that's...
I don't like it. It makes me feel funny.
But it's
Japanese are weird.
The real innovation here is that it's the first one really targeting women. Apparently, they have hundreds of these for guys, you know, of little French maid cafes and all that sort of thing.
I thought
it was very strange that they're basing them on characters that are supposed to be more interested in each other than the female customers.
Well, it's kind of like guys watching girls make out. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, but that fantasy...
Yeah, but that's not really a fantasy in the United States for most women. Or perceived, anyway.
What do you mean? Yeah, women watching men make out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
I've had friends who it was a big thing for them, but...
Go to one of those yaoi, conventions.
They do exist here, don't they?
Yeah, remember that guy was talking about it.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Aaron, you need to go cover that for us.
Yeah, I'll go. Well, yeah, it's you know, thousands of gals there. I'll show up.
That's valid.
I mean, like, you know. So they're looking at gay guys kissing in comic books. Who cares?
I guess the concept of, like, going
to get be the only real man on the ground.
Yeah, I don't think they're looking for that.
Just grow the beard out a little bit more before you go.
Here's the guy with all the hair.
So there's a camera that looks through clothing. A camera that can see explosives, drugs, and weapons hidden under clothing from 25 meters away has been invented. The through vision system could be deployed at airports, railway stations, and other public spaces. It's based on so-called terahertz or T-ray technology, normally used by astronomers to study dying stars. Although it's able to see through clothes, it does not reveal body detail or subject people to harmful radiation, according to the designers. It is totally and utterly passive. It receives only, said a spokesperson for through vision.
Wait, did you say body details?
Yeah. It does not see body details, yeah. Like
nipples.
Your junk. Yeah.
Well, then, what's the point of
bombs.
This article?
It sees bombs.
Weapons. It sees bombs, weapons,
bombs.
Stuff like that.
Boring. Yeah. Give me the one that's got the fine detail.
Yeah, it's not like, what was that in the James Cameron movie where they all go through the screen? Total Recall. It's not like Total Recall where they're all running by the screen and you're seeing their underwear.
Like, that was in
Airplane
2.
Yeah. Actually, they did have a version of this at one point. There were cameras that had infrared vision, and they found out that certain clothing was
Sony
invisible on infrared.
Yeah. These are able to pass through clothing, paper, ceramics, and wood, but are blocked by metal and water. If I were to look at you in terahertz, you would appear to glow like a light bulb, and different objects glow less brightly or more brightly. Other terahertz systems developed by companies such as TerraView are used to probe the structure of pharmaceutical compounds. So I think it actually can detect the force is what it is.
Be able to see my brass balls.
So I was on a website the other day, Reddit, and they mentioned there's a new website called Rate My Cop.
Okay. Well, there was.
Sorry, repeat that?
Rate My Cop.
Oh, thank you.
COP.
Yes. I totally misheard that.
We're basically, they have a list.
The other one exists.
Of every police.
It's around two, but it's got a lot more hits.
If you're only getting around two, Matt, you need to take a better picture.
Damn it. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
So basically, it has a list of every police officer in the United States, and you can go on to it. And if you have a bad experience or a good experience, you can say, this cop was great. This cop was bad. Okay.
Well, and this information was gotten through public record.
This is not any information that they will not put anything up except for the officer's name and badge number.
Right.
There's no other information about them. So a lot of police officers are obviously up in arms about this. They don't like the idea of having this. But
they think that they might find out where they live and find out where their families are and stuff like that.
Yeah. But obviously a lot of, you know, watchdog organizations think something like this is a great thing to do.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, today, GoDaddy took down the site. GoDaddy is the hosting site of
Geeks On.
And Geeks On. Yeah. And so apparently I was reading about it. And,
full disclosure.
They took it down without any warning. They just took it down. And
now they have different official reasons why they took it down, though.
Well, I think they say that there was too much traffic to it.
Yeah.
Which may be true.
Well, the guy said that it was bullshit. He says, no, there isn't too much traffic.
Yeah, well, he said that, you know, there were 400,000 hits yesterday. There were 80,000 today.
It was listed on FARC today, so it's entirely possible that it got bombarded.
I was going to say.
Well, it was Doug.
Yeah.
But still, that was the day before.
Right, so.
Maybe people were just mistyping to Don's other site.
Maybe.
You never know. But anyway, so
it's so tiny. It's just a two.
But this is not the first time that GoDaddy has been accused of shutting sites down for, you know, not good reasons, not judicious reasons. That's what I was looking for.
So were there other? Did they list other examples?
Because there is a site called NoDaddy.com, mm-hmm. which goes into details about it. mm-hmm. and basically says that, you know, they'll shut you down with no warning. They give one site 60 seconds warning before
they've
they
shut kept them. This podcast geeks on for 4 years.
And they've also been accused of trying to force people to not be able to go to other sites. You know, they'll if you want to make certain changes to your site, you have to click a button that basically says that you will lock in with them for another 90 days to make certain changes to your site. You know, so and that when you get renewed, you get locked in for night. There's all sorts of stuff, but it's an interesting story.
No stranger than a cell phone company.
But Rate My Cop, COP, is supposed to be back up in by Tuesday. I think it is.
Ba-dum-bum.
So it's supposed to be back up soon.
Got it.
We've lost Don, ladies and gentlemen. We've lost Don.
It's the best website ever.
Anybody else have news?
No, I'm done.
Don is giggling like a little girl over there.
It's because I'm overcome with joy at my next news story.
Ah, is that it?
No, this is the best news story ever. Yeah, you can tell because I'm clearing my throat for it. By most observers' reckoning, between 150 and 200 real-life superheroes, or REALs, as some call themselves, operate in the United States, with another 50 or so donning the cowl internationally. These crusaders range in age from 15 to 50 and patrol cities from Indianapolis to Cambridgeshire, England. They create heroic identities with names like Black Arrow, Green Scorpion, and Mr. Silent, and wear bright Superman spandex
Mr. Silent?
Or black ninja suits. Almost all share two traits in common.
They're
a
nuts.
Love of comic books and a desire to improve their communities. Okay?
Mr. Silent walks around going, shh, shh.
You might not be too far off. This article that we are going to put a link to on our website, I can't even go too deep into it because there's just too much. It's huge. It's an in-depth look at the phenomenon of the reels. Okay, so not only does this article go into depth about the way these different people live their lifestyles, which doesn't necessarily mean fighting crime. One such example, such as the cleaner, gets into his superhero costume and goes around his neighborhood picking up trash. Another cool. is a very interesting individual who wanders his neighborhood cutting the boots off of cars as a symbol of his rising rebellion against the man. Who would put that on people's cars?
Oh, boots. I was like, who's tying boots to cars?
Got it. Yes. That device yes. that
wow,
stops you from driving.
He cuts through that shit?
He cuts through that shit.
Damn.
Yeah, he is a superhero. So some of the interesting things on this article includes a worldwide map where you can look up the major superheroes near you, perhaps even find awesome. Your local reel. I'm disappointed to tell all of you, however, that the closest superheroes we have to our hometown of Los Angeles is the Wolf Spider in Orange County.
Evil has won here.
And Ragensi of Manhattan Beach, California.
And we need one here in Hollywood.
We do.
We need a we team.
We need a team.
Four. Four. Fighters. Four heroes. For truth and justice and geekdom.
But to give you an idea of some of these other people, like Nightfall in Boise, Idaho, keeping the streets of Idaho clean and safe.
I know people there. I'm going to have them go find them.
Nightfall.
Go find Nightfall.
Okay. Now, I also found another article that goes into the top 10 most famous superheroes. Okay. Real-life superheroes from around the world. The most famous one is Super Barrio from Mexico City.
Super Barrio?
Super Barrio. He actually is a flabby caped crusader in his late 40s, I think.
Shocking.
but for the past 10 years, he has stood as a champion for the working class, the poor, and the homeless.
Okay.
And has actually led marches and rallies in front of courthouses and demonstrations for labor unions, filed petitions and challenges of court decisions. So, I mean, he's actually doing stuff.
Fantastic.
You know? And
it's like Birdman lawyer dude.
Yep.
Birdman lawyer dude.
His followers find him inspirational and recently erected a statue in his honor, a giant lifelike replica that looks like an oversized Cabbage Patch doll at 40. The odd crowd chanted, "You see him, you feel him, Super Barrio is here."
Wow. That's cool.
So some other interesting people are Terrifica of New York City, who wanders clubs and bars late at night, trying to prevent drunk women from being taken advantage of.
Awesome.
The Eye from Mountain View, California.
So he's just a big cock block.
Hey.
Actually,
hey.
A woman.
No. Can't go home with her.
Citizen Prime from Phoenix, a tricked out gadgeteer whose biggest obstacle in overcoming crime so far has been finding it. Toffian.
Where does he live?
Phoenix, Arizona.
I would think that problem would be like Connecticut.
Yeah. I noticed there were no superheroes in Connecticut.
That's because we have sad. Martha Stewart.
Toffian from New Jersey, who is best noted for walking people home late at night. Angle Grinder Man. That's the guy who goes around cutting boots off of cars. Mr. Silent of Indianapolis. Chris Guardian of New York City.
What does Mr. Silent do, I must know?
Mr. Silent is a traditional masked vigilante. He actually goes around looking for people getting mugged.
Yikes.
He is a martial artist who fights with a cane, apparently.
Oh, no. that's just wrong.
Chris Guardian of New York City.
Ow, that hurt!
Geist of Minnesota and Foxfire of Michigan.
Geist. That's cool.
Geist.
Yep. So, I mean, it's just interesting to read these interviews with these people and see what they're up to. There's also a lot of them have MySpace pages that go into detail, and there's sort of a website where they coordinate with each other. It's a whole underground lifestyle that I just discovered this week.
So we'll put the link on our website to that article.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
Excellent.
Awesome. All right. I have one last couple announcements for video games. I don't normally actually am very excited about Game Informer magazine because it's usually just a giant ad.
Yeah, it's one big ad.
But they actually got some two exclusive things in here that I hadn't seen before. One, there's an awesome looking Aliens game coming out that's essentially Rainbow Six meets Alien. It's Colonial Marines, 4-person co-op. Essentially in the second Aliens movie.
Nice.
You go to LV-426.
Nice.
You have blow torches, you can seal doors, you have the motion trackers, the whole bit. It looks freaking awesome.
And you actually have to friendly fire anyone who says game over, man, game over.
Game over, man! Maybe. Game over! But they created new characters, and apparently they put little personalities to each one, so it seems kind of fun. If they
sounds great.
And the other one is a massively multiplayer online game for consoles. Yes, it seems like they're few and far between. But it's the guys who did City of Heroes.
Mm-hmm. How is City of Heroes
doing?
Do we know?
Don't recognize
it's
that
It's still
name.
On. It's, oh, Champions. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Champions Online.
Wow.
From the role-playing game Champions. They originally were building the Marvel MMO, which got canceled.
Right.
So they're like, well, what do we do with this
Why
game?
Did it get canceled?
I'm sure it's was licensing problems. That's
oh,
my guess.
Oh, dumb, I don't know. Dumb, dumb.
So they were like, well, let's just make Champions Online.
Marvel.
So this is coming to consoles, Xbox 360 and the PC right now. I'm have a probably sneaky suspicion.
It worries me. Because just knowing what they did with City of Heroes, if they didn't learn from their mistakes, like City of Heroes has hands down the best character generation system mm-hmm. I've ever seen. You can create beautiful, unique characters that no one else looks like. Problem is, they never change after that point. They look the same. I mean, you can make new costumes for them, but the costumes don't develop or mm-hmm. you don't kind of level up with them. You know, you can earn a cape, you can earn wings or sparkles or stuff, but after that, you just go around and you fight gang members. Like every critter you fight is another sort of humanoid guy that's got the same set of powers.
Yeah, I've actually been wanting to check back in with that game and with Star Wars Galaxies to see how they've been doing, whether or not they've actually made any adjustments now that their games have been hanging.
Well, you can play supervillains now. I know a couple people still playing. The villain expansion is out there.
Well, in this one here, they said that their costume development stuff is way more advanced than even the original one.
That's going to be fascinating.
And I don't, you know... Who knows about how the game is actually going to play? I think is a great idea. They're making it for the console, so yeah. I think that they're just taking a different approach to it. It's you know having turn-based, essentially MMOs are almost turn-based, where you hit these little powers that are at the bottom of the screen and you wait for the time to charge back up. It's like the same shit over and over.
Yeah.
They said this is going to play more like Marvel Alliance.
Oh,
where
okay.
You're actually hitting you're and doing combos okay. and yeah. stuff like that, which I think is a good idea. It's different,
yeah.
you know.
I yeah. mean, I support that.
Who knows? And then that you also not when you make your costume, your superpowers. You can also design your superpowers the way it looks. So you can like when you jump, you can say, "I want to jump like a robot. I want to jump like a wolf."
Nice.
Or my blaster is fire, ice. Green, blue, even though it may do the same amount of damage, you can customize the colors and all that. So everyone looks different when they're fighting. But you also design your arch enemy.
Oh, that's interesting.
And your arch enemy haunts you through the entire game.
That's cool.
And okay. will show up. So if you have a team of people, like if we all get together, we may be fighting, you know, henchmen or doing different missions. But sometime during the night, all of our arch villains might show up and team up against, you know, the group.
Okay, I'm there.
That seems pretty fun.
That would be
I'm
awesome.
More than willing to give that a shot.
So who knows? The game might suck, and I think it comes out next year because they got a lot of work.
They got some work.
But they have pictures here, and the pictures look pretty cool. So pick up a Game Informer magazine. That's the magazine that they sell at GameStop.
Yeah.
You know, it's their... You know.
GameStop EB.
Right. So anyway, it's pretty interesting. Both of those articles are in there.
Excellent.
Woot.
All right, I'm done.
I am too.
Why don't we move on to the meat of our discussion tonight?
Let's.
Hey, Cindy, do you want to go to the beach pool with me?
Yes, I do, Ted, because you're attractive and I'm beautiful.
Can I come?
No, Gary, no way.
Deep in a face mask with Kool-Aid lips and store-brand chips, a brand new world was born. Orcs, beholders, and dwarven acts, do way cool. Hey, look at her boobs, Gygax. Gary Gygax. Gary Gygax. You brought us geeks together. Gary Gygax. You made the world better. Gary Gygax. You brought us geeks together. Gary Gygax. You made the world better.
The one thing I did like about City Heroes was being able to make the characters. And like the character I played, I love the character. I'd love to make a little superhero story about her one day. The character was Shotgun Bride. It was like a 70s.
That was the name of your...
Shotgun Bride. That was the superhero
name. Was this
name.
Pre or post Kill Bill?
Pre, actually.
Huh.
And she was this 70s blaxploitation heroine with a big afro, dressed in like a white miniskirt with like knee-high white stockings and the biggest shotgun you've ever seen. It was great.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was hot. Loved it.
I was that way about Shadowrun. I used to love to just create different characters and see what type of abilities they could have.
Yeah.
How big is the city? Like, was it, you know... Like,
it was really huge. I mean, when you finally got your travel powers, mm-hmm. it was a big deal because you could actually go to the other places and okay. not spend an hour running.
Because MMOs
there.
Are so huge. When I heard it was just a city, I was kind of wondering how that works.
No, they had a subway system that, you know, the
superheroes... Could you take cars around or anything like that?
No, you took a subway.
Yeah. You couldn't fly to places?
Once you couldn't start with a travel power.
Oh,
you
I
had
see.
To level up to a point where you could take the travel power. And it wasn't that long
right,
before
right.
you got
couldn't
one.
Couldn't you just run along rooftops or something not as assy as
yes.
like, is the F train coming?
You could, but the cities, they were city size. They were huge. So it would take you forever to get anywhere.
I'll be right there.
What were some of the travel powers you could have? Were they? I mean, I can see flying, obviously.
Flight, super jumping, teleportation. Hyperspeed.
Do they have swinging?
They may have added that later, but I don't know.
Okay. Could you see it when it was happening if you were flying, or was it just
Yeah. It was you would fly. It was a 3D environment that now you could fly over the buildings and get a whole new view of the
and
city.
And jumping was the same thing. You'd see yourself go.
Yeah,
oh,
but you had less control while jumping than you did flying. But
right.
like. Jumping took less energy than flying did and was actually faster.
Mm.
You know, hyperspeed took more energy, ooh, but got you there faster.
I'm getting excited already. Sounds fun.
Teleportation just used so much energy. You would get halfway across the city and then just have to stop and, like, take a break.
Wow. Can you do little mini jumps, though?
Yeah. And the thing is, it was like a whole new branch of powers. So, like,
flight, your first thing you could do is hover, which is really, really slow. It's like slower than walking, but you could just hover in midair defensively. It was harder to hit you. For teleportation, you could teleport other people from any location to you if they allowed you, or you could teleport enemies to you, you know, that sort of thing. Anyway, the whole fascination with these worlds, these role-playing worlds... Started with one man, who we pay homage to this week. As I'm sure all of you have heard, Gary Gygax, creator of Dungeons & Dragons, the first major role-playing game in the world, has died.
Yes.
So today we pay tribute to the legacy that this one man's vision has had.
Yes.
When we talk about these MMOs like City of Heroes, World of Warcraft, even Lord of the Rings, which is based on a story from before Gary Gygax's time, all of these owe their very existence in a very real way to him. Do you understand what I mean by that? You look very skeptical.
Yeah, I'm wondering how a book that was written before Dungeons and Dragons,
the game, the MMO game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, the game. Based. Okay, got it.
Yes,
that's why I acknowledged it. It was based on a book from before his time.
I was
perhaps I could have been clearer in that.
Yeah, point. Actually, Gary Gygax and J.R.R. Tolkien were listed as tied for number one as the greatest influencers of modern gaming of all time. I believe it was in Sync magazine. Yes. They also voted him number one on the list of the 50 biggest nerds of all time.
Well, we're going to pay tribute to him. We don't know much about him as a person, so we're not going to go down that path. But we are going to talk about Dungeons & Dragons and how it influenced us and our take on Dungeons & Dragons. This is not a primer to the history of, per se. I mean, I think we will all, those of you might learn something out there about it. But this is kind of our path through Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah. So. And just for full disclosure, Gary was not the sole creator of Dungeons & Dragons. He did create it with Dave Arneson and Brian Bloom, and they created TSR as ostensibly an outgrowth of medieval miniature games, which they wanted to sort of... they wanted to play wargaming, and then they decided to, hey, let's add elves.
Well, I looked everywhere. For some reason, I can't find it, but I have that old chainmail.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have that old original book still.
Well, I was sitting here.
So chainmail was the very first of the Dungeons & Dragons books.
Yes.
It had the name Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, and I actually, it was this little teeny thin book that's like spiral bound, and it was just a bunch of, I got it as a kid after Dungeons & Dragons came out. They were still selling it, like in your game store, you could buy it. And it was essentially just a bunch of charts, and it assumed kind of that you knew, like, what knights and armors were. I mean, it was bare bones. Like, you had to be, you had to know what you were talking about to even open this book up. And then I actually had a supplement to it that made it more Dungeons & Dragons-y. Actually, it may have been called Dungeons & Dragons. It was like this little thin book, same size.
Well, you're older than us, so
how dare you?
But yeah. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons, TSR in Dungeons & Dragons was created in 1974. So yeah. I live in a world where Dungeons & Dragons has always been there.
When did you first get your first Dungeons & Dragons book, and how old were you, and who gave it to you?
I did not get one. I was about 9 years old. Every Wednesday, when it would be a half day, I would go and hang out with my grandfather. And he would take me to the local library. And downstairs in the children's department of the local library, they had every Dungeons & Dragons book. Every one.
Oh, really?
Wow.
And so I would go down, and it was really neat. And it's two of my ongoing obsessions were in this one aisle of the library. One side was movies and movie makeup, and specifically horror movies. And they had every horror movie imaginable. And so how they made the makeup for Wolfman, for, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Wow.
And on the other side, they had all of these Dungeons & Dragons books and comic books and like that. And I would just sit there with one every day and just go through every – I mean, they had all the adventure books, not
so
just the monster manuals.
You almost just read them as books.
I read them as books. I absolutely read them as books. Yeah.
I actually did the same thing. I was given my first basic Dungeons & Dragons book by my aunt when I was – God, I had to have been like 7 or 8. And it was even before I could really kind of fully read. Like, I was just sort of at the sort of starting point for reading for me. Mm. And it was a fascination with the pictures that kind of drew me in at first.
Yeah.
And when I could finally understand it, it seemed really strange to me that you could only get your character up to third level. And it just stopped there. Like, third level was the best you could possibly be.
Do you remember the clarification that ever came to you? For me, I would read it, and I would be looking at it, and there'd be all these weird abbreviations and strange sort of jargon code in the midst of everything. And I was always like, what does that mean?
It took me a long time to figure out THACO.
What's THACO? Why do they always put D in the middle of things? And I remember reading this, because I read The Adventures first, because those were the most logically like books. And then I worked my way back through to the Monster Manuals, and then eventually to the original book.
So, Don, you had the basic Dungeons & Dragons, like the little purple book that came in the box?
Yeah, I think, if I remember right, the basic Dungeons & Dragons, it's been years since I thought about this. It was a little red booklet that you could play a fighter, a magic user, a cleric, a thief, a halfling, a dwarf or an elf.
And they were all classes in that game. Yeah,
there were no race wasn't a separate thing.
Yeah.
It was like an elf was its own thing.
See, I had played Dungeons & Dragons when, I believe, it must have been, I don't know exactly when second edition, when the books came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like advanced Dungeons & Dragons.
AD&D,
Not second edition. Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, because I was getting into it.
Well, I think, if I recall, the Advanced Dungeons & Dragons and the Basic came out at the same time. You could just go either or.
Okay, because I kind of remember Basic coming out like a couple years later.
Basic, I remember getting Basic and then Expert Dungeons & Dragons, which had more levels and more spells.
Yeah, but that was, I think, after Advanced Dungeons & Dragons came out in the books. I'm almost sure. Anyway, because...
Yeah, D&D came out in 74, AD&D came out in 77.
Okay, that is about when I started playing, and a couple of my friends' brothers were into it. So I learned Dungeons & Dragons, the rules, through them. I didn't have to read the books at first, because he was game master.
Oh, so you had somebody explaining it to you.
So,
way easier.
So then I started...
Okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry. In 1977, the game was split into two versions, the simpler Dungeons & Dragons and the more complex Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So there were still two versions at one point. One that later went away. Because I remember getting the basic box, because I was a kid and I was...
I had the basic box as well, but I also had the other book. So it was kind of this weird... Remember the basic box gave you the 20-side die
and a bunch
the crayon?
Of oh, the crayon!
So you could...
Oh, I love the... Yeah!
So you could fill in the your die.
I remember actually, but long before I actually played Dungeons & Dragons or had the box, I mean, really little kid, like kindergarten, on the school bus, some of the other kids had a handful of the blue wax dice that came with that box.
That you could not read.
Well, that's what the crayon was for.
That was the crayon was for.
Right.
And I was fascinated by those dice. Yeah. I wanted those dice so badly.
So I started playing with an older kid. And so to me, Dungeons & Dragons was even more, fantastical because, of course, his stories and dungeon mastering was way more advanced than what I would have ever done my friends. So we were playing – the games were being run by probably – I don't know. There was probably in – 10th grade.
Well, that's very interesting. Were you taught by somebody else as well, Don? Or did you?
No, keep in mind, I grew up in the country. And so I had the books and I read them with fascination and dreamed of a day when one day I would meet somebody else who would play them with me.
See, I had sort of a similar experience. When I was a kid, I remember going into the bookstore in the mall and I remember seeing Dungeons & Dragons and just getting so excited about this basic set. And I remember getting this box, and if I remember correctly, it had a red dragon on the front.
And then your mother said, slapped you, and it was like, that's satanic.
Exactly. No, and I brought it home, and I remember opening it up and looking through it and having having a hard time. I was pretty young, having a hard time understanding how the mechanics of it worked, but really trying. I remember my brain hurting as I was trying to get my mind around it. And then I tried to go get my friends to play with me.
Yeah.
Oi.
That's when it broke down.
Well, I think we got about... an hour and a half into it before they decided that this wasn't their cup of tea. And it wasn't until I went away to boarding school when I was like 14 that I met a guy named Justice Platt who was in my dorm.
Justice Platt.
That was his real name, Justice Platt.
Wow, he's one of the heroes. And he's a real now.
Yeah.
He was great because he was this big burly guy with a full beard in boarding school, okay? Who walked around with these shit kicker boots and plaid red like shirt.
His middle name was Hagrid.
Yeah. And so I and another kid named Kyle Okula. What type of names are these? What? We played.
You're totally making this up.
I am not making it up. And I remember one of my favorite moments in one of the games was we.
So you hung out with two guys named Justice and Okula?
And Kyle Okula. And
Justice and Okula. And your middle name is Gamble.
Yeah.
So it was Justice, Gamble, and Okula.
Justice, Okula, Gamble, together again.
All right, keep going. Sorry, it was just...
So I just remember...
you missed your calling, brother.
Hey, I gotta tell you. This guy was so creative. He had some of the best and most fun adventures. And I just remember this moment where Kyle... wanted to attack someone with his bastard sword in a hallway. And he's like, it's a bastard sword. This is a hallway. The bastard sword is as big as you. How are you going to swing it? So he gave him like a negative 10 to hit, and he rolled a 2. So he very firmly went to attack with his bastard sword and got it stuck in the ceiling.
The best number one. The low rolling is always the funniest part of the game.
Yes.
Of course, that was also the time in which, because it was something new...
Did he create the dice, by the way? I know that there were scientific dice that existed.
I don't know.
But I think he created the dice. I do not know the origins
of the dice.
But I think that, because I know he was experimenting with them, but I don't remember any of the polyhedral dice.
My understanding is he was a war gamer.
Yes.
Before he came into it. So I have to assume he was a wargamer. He was using the dice for wargames.
Wargamers are primarily six-sideds, though.
Well, maybe. I don't know if they... Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't play enough wargames.
That'd be interesting to look
at. Somebody's screaming right now. But, okay, so this was a time, because it was new, when all the bullshit started coming
out. Oh, yeah.
Right? So we had...
But this was also... It also was introducing a genre of... entertainment, not just the new style of storytelling, right? Which I think was scary to people in some ways. You know, these kids are getting together in a dark room somewhere, and they're like making believe.
Yeah.
Right? And for some reason, that was very scary to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But more than that, it was also that they were making believe elves, dwarves, dragons, and skeletons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was sort of a genre. The fantasy genre didn't really exist that much.
Well,
you know?
I mean, the fantasy existed.
You had
in
fairy tales.
Well, no, it existed in. I mean, The Hobbit.
Yeah, they existed.
And Lord of the
fiction.
Rings had come out. In fact, a couple of their influences. I've got a list of a couple of their influences, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. The presence of halflings, elves, dwarves, half elves, orcs, dragons, and the like often draw a comparison to the works of J.R.R. Tolkien. Mm-hmm. In fact, they had to change the name of Hobbit to Halfling, Ent to Trent, or Treant, and Balrog to Balor. In terms of things, because they were infringing on copyrights.
Right.
So they were drawing from things like that. They also got...
he was drawing on Robert Howard in the Conan saga, especially.
Yeah.
Sprague de Camp all over the world.
The magic system in which wizards memorize spells that are used up once cast and must be rememorized the next day was heavily influenced by the Dying Earth series by the novels of Jack Vance.
Jack Vance, yeah.
The original alignment system, which grouped all players into creatures of law, neutrality, and chaos... was derived from the novels.
I mean, we live in his world. I mean, we definitely live in his world with hit points, with, you know, being able to choose your alignment, with, you know, all of the algorithms which he created. We are very definitely living in his world now.
But I really think the point is, after Dungeons & Dragons was introduced, you know, the fantasy movie exploded in the 70s.
Yeah.
They were all low budget, horrifically low budget. And I would hazard a guess that Dungeons & Dragons played a huge part in introducing that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, but I think, you know, there's always a target. So all those, you know, just
have you read? Have you read The Chick Tract? The very funny Chick Tract about, you know,
we've linked to it before. Okay.
We'll link to it again. But, you know, again, there's always a target. Video games.
Heavy metal.
Mass Effect. Heavy metal. So, yeah. Okay. So there's some skeletons in there and some elves. All that is a crack in the cliff for these, you know, crazies to crawl up. I mean, it would have been anything.
It's very poetic, actually very true.
Well, I mean, science
so
fiction...
So what he's referring to is in the late 70s and
early,
throughout the 80s.
Yeah, throughout the 80s.
Even the 90s, and a little bit now. Dungeons & Dragons was a target for a lot of protests by parents groups.
Religious groups.
85, that was the formation of the cartoon. That was when it, like,
right.
exploded
well,
huge
that
time.
That condemned it as being satanic.
Mm-hmm.
Much in the
usually
way that,
a gateway drug to Wicca and Satanism.
Yeah.
Much in the way that Harry Potter is being condemned today. Yeah. Except right. with significantly more vehemence and people actually gave it a little more credibility back then.
But yeah. also was also not just... the Satanist part, but also psychologists were saying this is contributing to suicides, that people are getting yeah. too into it, and so their personality is changing. I mean, Satanists aside,
okay.
these were psychologists who were thinking that if you role play too much, you're going to go off the deep end.
If there was a reversion and a lot more kids were playing D&D now rather than going online and playing their video games, what do you think the reaction would be? I mean, I think people would actually kind of applaud it and say, oh, great, these kids are reading books now rather
they're
than...
They're being social.
Yeah.
I don't think they would.
Really?
I think
you think they still condemn it today?
I think there would be people that would come out and start condemning it and saying that when you start actually role-playing, it gets too real and all that type of stuff.
There's always somebody out there. I mean, it's like, come on.
I mean, personally, I would love to see it that happen. You know, I
Me
think
too.
Role-playing was going strong until... you know, even with video games around, role playing was still doing fairly well. I think it was until Magic the Gathering really
hit. Well, video games used to be social too. I used to go to an arcade.
That's true. You used to go to the arcade, or you used to go over to the friend's house who had the system,
yeah.
and you'd hang out with them and play.
Well, later on the discussion, we'll talk about how Dungeons and Dragons is changing, and maybe how that might get back to it a little bit.
Okay.
But so we're in the 80s. Dungeons and Dragons starts making a change.
Yeah.
Well, it's also starts spawning other media.
Other media. And let me just list down a couple of things that Gary Gygax created, which is fantastic. Greyhawk, of course.
The whole... which is a world that you play the game in.
Yes.
Well, that's the first big change.
Suddenly...
I mean, I left Dungeons & Dragons
right
for
when
a
Greyhawk
while,
came in, or...?
When it became less generic.
Ah.
Yeah.
See, Dungeons & Dragons didn't have a world. Well, okay.
And you went to the most generic role-playing game.
Well, it's
game
true. Like, if you, I remember
well,
back
yeah,
when,
I
you,
like
when you played, if you played a cleric, which is a priest, you know, you prayed to the great gods above way back when.
Right.
Right.
And then Greyhawk introduced the concept of fantasy gods that
right.
you would take
well,
as a patron.
No, they had...
demons and deities, yeah.
Demigods and deities were the book. I mean, they had all the
Yeah,
the,
there was stuff
the
there, but those were additions. You know, the
yeah,
base
yeah,
book
yeah.
didn't have any of that.
No, 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 no. But yeah, and they what they said was, you create your world. Here is
yeah.
all the tool sets. Now create your world. In, you know, the 80s, we started getting to the official
other worlds.
Worlds of Dungeons and Dragons.
And
that's
he also
when I
did
leaving.
Gamma World in the early 80s, and then later Cyborg Commando in the late 80s. Late
Top
80s.
Secret.
Dangerous Journeys, Legendary Adventures. Legendary Adventures is huge.
What about
that's recent.
I mean, not Trailer. What about Star Frontiers, Gary?
I don't
no.
know.
Okay, but that was
or
TSR.
Or at least it's not listed on his thing, but it was TSR.
TSR,
yeah.
Yeah.
He lost TSR to a big dispute when he was off doing the CBS TV show. So TSR actually was under a controlling interest of two other guys, and they took it over from him.
Gotcha.
And he had to create a whole new company.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we got some new... So what were the worlds that were created?
I mean, at this point, there have been a lot. You know,
what do you mean?
Greyhawk, Kryn.
Yeah.
We got Forgotten Realms, which is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forgotten okay. Realms.
Dragonlance.
Dragonlance is...
Oh,
yeah.
That's, yeah. Okay.
That's Kryn.
The point is that they came out with so many different books. In fact, there's a great web comic called XKCD. And on the day that Gary Gygax died, they had a lovely tribute to him, which was there's someone calling up Death going, "Where are you?" And Death is like, "Okay, you know that rule where when someone dies, they get to challenge you to a game? And if they win, they get to keep their soul and live." And the person goes, "Yes." And then you cut to he's playing Gary Gygax, who's in Death goes, "Not another rule book."
And yeah. And Gary Gygax yeah. going, hold on. I got to get out my paladin.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, what's some of the new, what the other media?
I think, well, it was also, let me just throw out there, Dungeons & Dragons was also the first one to demonstrate how profitable this could be.
Oh, yeah.
By just pumping out constant numbers of supplements.
Yep.
Something which has damaged the role-playing industry a little bit.
Yeah,
to this point
and which Palladium Books jumped into with both feet.
Oh, they're not alone. I mean, yeah. Shall we say GURPS? Yeah. Hello.
GURPS is dying.
GURPS will break you. You know,
GURPS is dying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's keep
what,
in mind.
What did? Oh, go ahead.
I was just, let's keep in mind that board games were dying not too long ago. So there's, you know,
well, true.
Certainly room for a resurgence.
What did second edition do? That's when they started kind of cleaning up the game.
Yeah. Like, that's when FACO stopped being literally like a mind fuck to explain to people. Where they're like, okay, now if you have an armor class of -4, and I have, then what does that make my THACO? Yeah. Yeah, you were like, okay.
Well, they also did some, I mean, they started trying to clean up, like, they took out demons.
Yeah. Well,
and also, about the time they started doing it, and that you couldn't play, like, evil, I think the evil alignment.
Yeah, that's when they introduced the concept of the evil alignment.
Yeah.
The originally, it was just lawful, neutral, and chaotic.
Right.
No. In Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, you had the whole...
Well, in Advanced, in advanced
yeah, you had Chaotic Evil, you had Chaotic Neutral. Everybody ended up playing Lawful Neutral every time.
I thought they started kind of...
Everyone was Chaotic Neutral where I grew up.
Oh, really?
I thought they started pussifying it around.
Well, here's something
pussifying?
From Wikipedia, which basically says, the release of AD&D 2nd Edition also corresponded with an effort to remove aspects of the game which had attracted negative publicity.
Yeah.
The edition removed references to demons and devils, sexually suggestive artwork...
Damn.
And playable evil aligned characters such as assassins and half orcs.
So yeah, that lasted for 10 minutes.
Aside from these revisions, rules underwent a number of minor changes, including the addition of non weapon proficiencies, which are skill like ability. Well, we know there.
That was for the Oriental adventures.
And the division of magic spells into schools and spheres. So
interesting.
Yeah. They also had the different... I remember when they started inventing new planes of reality.
Yeah.
At which point I was like, oh, this game just got crazy.
Yeah.
And this is when they started doing new genres such as Ravenloft, Spelljammer.
Ravenloft. How did I forget Ravenloft?
And the apocalyptic Dark Sun.
Dark Sun, that's what I was trying to think of. I just remember the feral halflings in Dark Sun and just thinking that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard.
I just liked Ravenloft and the,
that was the horror version of
horror.
Forgotten Realms.
Just abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
Yeah, exactly. Why bother even bringing a character into this game because you're going to die? Yeah.
All right, so this is when I get a little... Maybe you can clear this up for me. Because I left the Dungeons of O Dragons at around this time. Second edition is out. That is not the D20 system, right?
No.
Okay. Not for a number of years later.
Okay. Yeah. So, second edition came out. That's when we started getting all the novels.
Yes.
That's when
that's when Dragonlance came out. Margaret Weiss, Tracy Hickman. Fantastic set of books.
Dragonlance was so good.
So good.
Okay. And we got the television show.
Television show. That was 85. So,
85. That
you're
looked
sort
like
of
ass.
Jumping around in time.
Welcome to the world of... Dungeons and Dragons.
We're talking about the cartoon.
Yeah. I am the Dungeon Master.
I got to tell you, I had forgotten about that until I just went on to look at the opening of that.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That was so bad.
Yeah, I loved it, though, when I watched it.
That was the one cartoon.
It.
I used to, when I was a little kid, I would occasionally tape the cartoon lineup.
I wanted that damn bow really bad.
And I could convince my father to watch the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon with me. That was the one cartoon he would be willing to watch.
Yeah, I was too old for that.
You sort of tuned out of cartoons, didn't you?
Yeah, because I was too old.
Right. Well, I don't know what you're talking about because I really haven't done that yet.
Uni.
The name of that.
Oh, my
Uni.
God. Yep. Yeah. Wait, in Uni, who sounded like...
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was, like, way too good.
Yes. I used to copy.
Like a goat?
Yeah. Uni used to
be like... He was a goat unicorn.
But you're goat unicorn, yeah.
And what was up with the Dungeon Master? How did they work that in? Like, he was a thing.
Yeah, he was a guy who was sort
like
of guiding them through the game.
Gnome.
Yes, yeah. But why was he there? Like, he's
no
the one
knew.
Who recruit. He recruited them.
He recruited them on their roller coaster ride, literally. and brought them into the world to fight Tiamat. And
gave them stuff.
And I know. Gary Gygax actually had a part in this.
Oh, yeah. He had a big part.
What he was working on.
He was working on it.
When he got kicked out of TSR.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, you got to love him for what he did right, not what he did wrong.
Yeah.
I'm with you, brother. All right, so you guys read the books. I didn't read the...
I bought into
it. The Dragonlance books were wonderful.
Dragonlance books are fantastic.
They were wonderful.
Even a lot of the expansions, although I'm not as big of a fan as the expansions, I like the twin series.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to ask. That was based on Dungeons... I didn't realize...
Yes, Dragonlance was...
It was a game the two of them ran,
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
and they wrote down what people did and then wrote their adventure as the series of books.
Who was it?
Wow.
Two of who? Margaret Weiss
and Tracy Hickman. Husband and wife, I believe. Aren't they related? Are they?
I actually thought they weren't.
Really?
No.
They're not together?
Well, we've met... Both of them. I don't.
We met Margaret Weiss. I don't know. We'll look
Tracy,
it up.
Tracy. We've met. They listen to our show sometimes. So
God.
Hi. Gotta love Raistlin. I mean, one of the best characters of all time.
Yes. Well, Raistlin and Caramon.
I liked Tika.
Really?
Big shock.
Really?
She made potatoes.
Yes. She was the barmaid character.
And the,
books
are still...
She was the barmaid who suddenly started kicking ass.
Yes.
But there's still Dungeons & Dragons books being written.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The D20 system.
R.A. Salvatore books starring Drizzt
Droerden. Yes.
Drizzt, the dark elf.
Who is like...
The most repeatedly knocked off character by people on... World of Warcraft ever.
Yes, absolutely. And the biggest min-maxed character ever written.
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, he could not be cooler. He's, a drow elf, so he's a dark elf, who's against the rest of the drow.
Right,
he's a thief. He's a magic user. He's a fighter. You know, and he's got this cool scimitar of speed.
He's one of the most loved characters from the Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, he fights with two swords, two scimitars.
I seem to recall he was not actually a magic user. He just had racial inherent abilities. Is that correct?
I remember him throwing spells, but maybe...
Hello, I seem to recall racial inherent ability.
If I recall correctly, he was a ranger, and rangers can use magic.
Yeah, I believe he used spells at some point. I'm not sure. And
rangers also get some thief-like abilities, so maybe that's what you're talking about.
Okay.
That might be what you're talking about. Hello.
But the point is, so not only did Dungeons & Dragons launch this game, but it launched, the cartoon... The book series of many, many different heroes, many different worlds,
and
many different genres.
That's when a lot of video games started being made with the rule set built in or specifically called Dungeons and Dragons. I mean,
absolutely.
It started earlier, but 80s is when it started launching.
And even those that did not specifically call themselves Dungeons and Dragons, the concept of hit points. The concept of leveling up.
Concept of stats.
Stats, let's face it.
Numerical values for what a human being represents makes so much sense for a computer representation.
Right.
And so, to be able to numerically evaluate what, something should be, that's why we have our universe now.
It's also, the video games are still coming out now with Dungeons & Dragons rule set. And I think part of it is that there is a system that has been at least semi-balanced through pen and paper. And, I'm sure you have to tweak it when you get into a real-time, environment and that type of stuff. But in general, some of the work is done for you.
Yeah.
So, like Knights of the Old Republic is essentially D20, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
I believe it actually is D20.
Yeah, it's D20.
I believe it uses the D20 system as its new number generator.
So there's the only...
At this point, we might want to actually start discussing what the D20 system is.
Okay, so after second edition, then we...
Second edition lasted for many, many, many years.
Yes.
And then TSR, or not TSR anymore, TSR went away.
Right.
Wizards of the Coast bought
D20, I believe.
No. D20 is a creation of Wizards of the Coast.
Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
They bought Dungeons & Dragons, and then Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast. Is that correct? I believe.
Now you got me confused.
I know Hasbro owns
Wizards
of the Coast.
Long story short, I think TSR became Wizards of the Coast. I don't think they were bought by them. I think they became...
No.
No?
They bought them?
Yeah.
Who was Wizards of the Coast before that?
They made Magic.
They made Magic, the Gathering.
Oh, you're right. Oh, yeah. I forgot that.
Yeah.
You're right.
magic and
Wizards of the Coast bought TSR. They absorbed that.
Yeah.
And then Hasbro bought Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah. All right. So tell me about third edition. Tell me about the D20.
So many years after second edition, you know, many, many years, they come up with third edition Dungeons and Dragons, which is the D20 version. What that basically did was there were all these cryptic rules in the original Dungeons and Dragons.
Thaco.
You know, that AC. Yeah, it was just consistently confusing to people. Mm-hmm. So what the D20 system did was it just basically, like once upon a time, to describe your armor class, how hard it was to hit you, you started at armor class 10, right? If you were standing there unarmored and not dodging, you were armor class 10. And then the more armor you put on, the lower your armor class went.
Right.
So eventually it dipped below zero, and then you have -5, -8, -10. And that was sort of befuddling to people. So what they did was they flipped that. So now
you could always go up.
If you're standing there completely unarmed and not dodging, your armor class is 10. And then as you put armor on, it gets higher and higher and higher and higher and higher.
Right.
Got it.
Saving throws became sort of unified. You no longer – basically, what they did was rather than always having to wonder, am I supposed to be rolling low or high, you always want to roll high now.
Yeah.
High is good. Right. Always high is good.
Now, I mean
– and that's the biggest change for me. They also streamlined a lot of character classes.
But they also – they modernized the character creation, if I'm not –
yes.
I'm not correct, is before it was – here, pick your character class, and here's the set of things you got.
Yes, you're
but
absolutely
now
right.
You can buy. You had the character points.
You can get
system.
Feats. You can get
feats were introduced, which
skills
were a huge deal.
Well.
I mean,
skills
essentially, feet, yeah. There was other role playing games that were more. I mean, you had the hero system. You had GURPS. You had all these other things. And Vampire. Yeah. There was just outclassing it.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, TSR was in bankruptcy around that time. I mean, they were in big trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is probably what saved them at the time.
So. Well, and then they did the two other things that I thought were very important for reviving it. Mm-hmm. They made the system a system, and it was not tied to Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
So, and they made it as a system that other people could use. Other companies could
put
out a D20
game. So now
game.
We have the Wheel of Time D20 game. We have the Star Wars
Spycraft,
D20 game.
You had all these companies making it based off the rules. It became a generic role-playing system, essentially, like GURPS, like a lot of other, like Heroes.
Right.
And because you didn't, I don't even think you had to pay Wizard of the Coast to put a game out. I think you just had to ask their permission.
I don't know.
I'm not quite sure about that, but I think that's the reason why it blew up. I mean,
yeah, it got huge.
Everywhere.
D20 went crazy. Yeah.
It went crazy.
But it's also because it was a very good, very simple, very easy to understand system.
But now Hasborg does own D20, so I know all of the games put out are through Hasborg.
Okay.
They will be
assimilated.
They
locked it down again.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about why do you think that it's not doing as well now? Why do you think it's in decline? Is it really in decline, first of all? Let's start with that.
Gaming stores are in decline, yes. We know
this
for
a fact.
Well,
yeah, brick and mortar are.
Yes.
But I do know that they sell these at any bookstore. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
you can
buy a Dungeons & Dragons basic book, you know, Player's Handbook, at Walden Books now.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
the
Walden
is,
Books. Where do we live?
this is how the role playing game market and actually board game market works nowadays. You have to have modules or additions or card packs.
Yes.
Or
you have to have stuff that's constantly coming out. You have to constantly have really good art. I mean, that's one of the things which is, you know, really, really important. And I think that actually you can attribute that in many ways to Palladium, is they said, you know, hey, let's put out a soft cover, more comic booky-like book with really, really good art, and let's see how it rolls.
But
what happens
with things like, well, with all these games, is that after a while, after 6 years or 5 years or 3 years of a game, the basic game coming out with all the, you know, meat... been spelled out to you all, and then these editions come out. But pretty soon you get tired of it. There's nothing else to buy.
I've played this game,
so that's when a new freaking edition comes out.
Yep.
And guess what? Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition is coming out in June.
But also, I mean, let's face it, Dungeons & Dragons, the market has been split. You know, Dungeons & Dragons is still basically an entry-level drug. But to people who play role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons is still seen as one of the more kind of simple, you know, easy things. When a father wants to teach his role-playing to his son, he usually starts him off on Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
You know? But there's a dozen other role-playing games now that it shares the market with that are much more niche. You know, you have the dark vampire worlds. You have the bright, you know, sci-fi role-playing worlds of mm-hmm. Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the role-playing world is much more divided now than it was in the 1970s when Dungeons & Dragons was just the be-all and end-all.
Yep. Well, you true. Know,
there were many other games.
But in the 80s, I mean... 80s champions and travelers TMNT. And GURPSes and
but even then it still held the lion's share of fame and infamy.
Well, and I think it still does. I mean, you walk down the street and yell out GURPS, Heroes, and Dungeons and Dragons. Who knows? No one's going to pick any of those but Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah,
probably true.
I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. There should be. We should also mention a few of the other things that Gary created. He created these amazing board games. He did create Alexander the Great, Alexander's Other Battles, Baku, Crusader, Dunkirk, Little Bighorn, and Dungeon! Exclamation
Dungeon.
Point!
Dungeon! I love Dungeon.
Yeah, and also he created a chess variant called Dragon Chess, which was a three-dimensional fantasy chess variant, and it's really awesome. I've played it once, and I was almost lost my mind in the middle of it, but it was still really, really cool. Yeah.
You mean Satan almost?
Yes,
took your soul?
Satan almost brought me down to hell. And...
But I would say the Dungeons and Dragons is not suffering more than the role playing industry at large.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, I think the problem is role playing right now is fighting against the other competitors for people's time: collectible card games, video games.
Well, not to mention World of Warcraft and all of the other ones, which are, I mean, very definitively children of Dungeons & Dragons, but now who own the lion's share of the market and attention span.
I think that's the thing. With all of these games, you can sit down and play. Boom. And you can sit down and play whenever you want.
Yeah.
You don't have to schedule it. You don't have to give up a few hours and schedule with your friends when you can fit each other in the same room.
I would love to have a Dungeons & Dragons game that would be feasible, that they would be able to keep your characters online, you know,
okay.
where somebody would be able to be a dungeon master.
Well, let's talk about fourth edition. Fourth edition is coming out in June.
Yeah.
I think Wizards of the Coast they sat down and had a come to Jesus meeting about who they're competing with. And it is not other role-playing games. It is video games and television.
Yeah.
You get immediate response. You don't have to collect your friends. You can do it in the middle of the night, blah, 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 blah. You can't do that with a role-playing game.
Right.
So now we have Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. Okay, I don't know what rule changes there are. I hear they're cleaning up this and that, and they're making some of the levels, character levels, a little more fun to play. You know, everyone knows that most role-playing games has kind of a sweet spot of where your leveled character is. I think everyone found it.
Things are still challenging, but you're not a weenie.
Yeah, well, to me, that's a dungeon master problem, not a video. That's not a system problem, but, you know, whatever. So they're apparently fixing that, and they're kind of shaving off some of the fiddly bits. But really, it seems what they're doing is adding this tool set so that you can play online.
Mm-hmm.
They're building it all. If you buy a book, if you buy Dungeons & Dragons the book, it has a little code. You go and you register, and you can build a character online with an avatar, build your maps, your dungeon crawling maps, all that stuff straight out.
I'll do it.
And I think it has voice chat, everything, and you can literally play the game online. And I think it has a full monster manual built in so that you can, if you pick a monster, there's a 3D monster in there.
Is it Temple of Opshai kind of thing? I mean, I know I covered this news story twice, but... You know, is it going to be basically like you go 20 feet into a room that's 10 by 10? Or how? What are the other characters going to see when...
Well, it's like a miniature board game.
I think you'll see a map that unfolds in front of you as you move through, just like when you play one of the... I'm assuming it's like when you play one of those old school...
tile games.
Tile games, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's like a virtual tile game. And
I have to admit, on one level, as one of those people who never played with the maps in their Dungeons & Dragons game...
Yeah, me neither.
For me, I think that's a little sad. I mean, I loved the concept of a game that existed entirely in your head, you know, and sharing that with people.
This might have, you know? This if you can do voice chat, roll dice, and draw, picto draw, and do whatever. And I think you can also give people, you can make pictures and all that and sit and give it to people and it shows up on their screen. You might be able to do that without the map.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think maybe that just might be another tool set that you can use. But if you can make an old scroll and all that stuff and send it to your players and play.
How's the dice rolling? Yeah. Is the dice rolling a click of the button or is it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. They have all the D's. You hit the button and it shows who rolls it. And
no more cheating with the dice though.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
no.
And you can't have lucky dice.
Right.
Ooh,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's my lucky mouse I click with.
I know that kind of that does kind of suck.
Yeah.
They should have like you could buy dice.
Well, I just discovered a new type of dice that I really want. It's like a hollow 10-sided die that has a smaller 10-sided die inside of it so you can roll percentiles.
Oh, that's cool.
Interesting.
I really like that.
Still geek.
So, yeah. So, 4th edition, I think, might be trying to solve some of those problems. And I'm
It'll be interesting
curious
to see how people take it. I just think that, you know, I so sound like an old person when I say this, you know? But there's a lot of the younger generation that I've met that they don't seem to have sort of the depth of imagination that I'm used to from people of that age.
Well, it was very interesting.
No, I'm not saying they don't have the same imagination I did. I'm saying there's a certain imagination that I'm used to from children that I don't see so much anymore.
You're an old person.
Yeah, you're being just old.
Yeah, I used to drive my friend's kids to school when I was his assistant, and we would tell stories on the way. We would make up stories along the way. Mm-hmm. And so I would be telling a story, and they would change it. And just make it – they wanted to go different ways. And they were incredibly creative stories.
Well, you're talking about a specific – you know, a specific set – two children of someone whose brain I assume you respect. You know, yeah. I'm talking about broad
Don
groups of children.
Don has done an extensive study of the rest of the country.
Don study.
he is –
although I will say
– oh, I think I read that study. Yeah.
I'm talking about groups of children coming in at the places I work. I'm talking large hordes of children.
Although I will say when I was on World of Warcraft looking up the death of Gary Gygax, there was this whole thread on him on World of Warcraft. And a bunch of people came on and went, this is off topic. We're not allowed to talk about anything but World of Warcraft on this forum.
And that's
why
the mentality
in the hell
that I'm worried about.
Are you talking about this guy? And like it created
the big difference to me between video games based on Dungeons and Dragons and Dungeons and Dragons is that since Dungeons and Dragons exists entirely in your mind, the rules are just suggestions.
Yep.
And
yeah.
You feel you can go in any direction you want. You must think.
Yeah.
In video games, you choose destination specifically. You choose what specific power you're going to take, you know, and everything is within these constraints. You know, you have limited creativity.
Well, I mean, come on. No matter what someone tells me at all, you do not role play when you're in a video game at this point. Baldur's Gate is not a role-playing game.
No.
I don't care if you
it's
dress
really
up your
cool
little doll or not. It's not a role-playing game.
Yeah. I mean, some people role-play with each other on MMORPGs.
Okay, that's cool.
But
that's cool.
But it's a little different.
Yeah. It's totally different.
Yeah,
so.
And I challenge that you can't really kind of create the sort of epic worlds and influence the world the way you do in a tabletop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
not
there
yet.
There might be some games coming up.
Not yet. We'll see.
Mass Effect, I kind of empathize with the character, and I chose to do certain things because of my character. And
right.
Like I was telling you, we were talking about this earlier about what's the game you're playing?
Oblivion.
Oblivion.
Yeah.
I said, well, my character wouldn't do that. And you said, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's just a video game. You can go either way.
Yeah.
And to me, I actually had a character in mind, and he just doesn't do those certain things. So I guess in a way, maybe we're heading down that path.
Almost
but right
there.
Now,
I think Oblivion was about as close as you get. And I mean, because that was such an open universe. I mean, you didn't have to do the story. You know, you could go and just sit on a farm if you wanted to in Oblivion.
But each thing that you can do in Oblivion is set. It's specific. I can't put I can do if there's a twist to the story for this quest.
Right.
There's two ways it can be completed. In tabletop, You know, I could kill the person who gave me the quest. I could reward them by bringing them a long-lost child they never knew about that had nothing to do with the quest. I could burn their house to the ground. I could build them an addition. You know, I could do whatever the heck I want. I can play it 1,000 different ways.
Right.
That one quest. Yeah. That's the eternal limitation of the video game.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, I think that's the reason why you should definitely... I mean, there's both hobbies or...
No,
two
they're
separate
both
things.
Wonderful, yeah, but I think video games facilitate a specific story being told.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and their stories are not truly interactive.
Right, right.
You know,
it's not a shared storytelling experience. It's
exactly.
You experiencing the story that
they want to tell you.
Yeah, and again, I think we might be heading into times where that might change.
Well, we'll see with fourth edition, won't we?
Yeah, so
there's a little just a tribute from a guy who wrote in the New York Times to Gary Gygax, and I'd just like to close with that, unless you guys have other things that you wanted to bring up.
Nope. Go ahead.
All right. This is just a small quote from his article. We'll link to it on the site. Geeks like algorithms. We like sets of rules that guide future behavior. But people, normal people, consistently act outside rule sets. People are messy and unpredictable until you have something like the Dungeons & Dragons character sheet. Once you've broken down the elements of an invented personality into numbers generated from dice, paper, and pencil, you can do the same for your real self. For us, the character sheet and the rules for adventuring in an imaginary world became a manual for how people are put together. Life could be lived as a kind of vast, always-on role-playing campaign. Don't give me that look. I know I'm not a paladin, and I know I don't live in the Matrix, but the realization that everyone else was engaged in role-playing all the time gave my universe rules and orders. We geeks might not be able to intuit the subtext of a facial expression or a casual phrase, but give us a behavioral algorithm, and human interactions became a data stream. We can process what is going on in the heads of the people around us. Through careful observation of body language and awkward silences, we can even learn to detect when we are bringing the party down with our analysis of how loop quantum gravity helps explain the time travel in that new Terminator TV show. I mean, so I hear. Mr. Gygax's game allowed geeks to venture out of our dungeons, blinking against the light just in time to create the present age of electronic miracles.
Yay.
Good tribute.
Thank you, anyway, Mr. Gygax.
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, thank you, Mr. Gygax, for also creating something that has... introduced me to all sorts of friends and stuff.
Excellent.
Because, you know, I have many friends in my past that I wouldn't have met if I hadn't been role-playing. And so.
Although I mentioned to a friend of ours that Gary Gygax had died, and she said, did he die in his mother's basement?
Oh.
Which was the worst.
Did you spank her?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
We want to pay one quick shout-out to Will and Brian in Munich.
Yes.
Who have launched their own podcast
SecureImmaturity.com.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we'll put a link up to that on our website. Congratulations, guys. They are longtime listeners and forumites.
Yeah.
And they are fascinating people in and of their own right. So check them out.
Yes.
Exactly.
All right.
Anything else? I think this will probably be out before our geeky. So go to the forums and vote under the 2007 Geeky Awards.
Yes.
There's all sorts of categories there. Go into each one and vote for your favorite movie, video game, person, sexy, bang. It's all there. And then we will pick the People's Choice Awards in our next podcast. Coming up.
Excellent.
All right. So have a good geek week, everybody. Bye.
Rock it out.
Geek it out. Where you've gone.
play D&D. For real, seriously, I am going to play D&D. I am a monk with Fist of Fury. I don't need armor. My dungeon master is named Ben. He's wicked cool. Thanks, Gary. Yikes. Yeah, yeah.